Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Another Jets loss and what is another embarrassing performance in many ways. Now, obviously, to me, the main culprit would have been Justin Fields. I still did not think that Tyrod Taylor would have been the answer, although Justin Fields was awful. But my issue were with Aaron Glenn, the way he managed that end of the first half. He since acknowledged his mistakes, or even the end of the game, just try to kick the field goal there. He did not do that. So many issues once again, BT. Even though there were some positive signs, whether it's cleaning up the penalties, whether the defense being much better, still many issues in another Jets loss.
There's just too many issues here. And let's face it, guys, we're scarred by all the other, you know, failures that came before Aaron Glenn. So let's say in 2 years, Aaron Glenn's, if he is, and I really hope it works out, obviously, and I think there's a chance that it still could. I'm not getting on the air saying fire him today, but I'm very worried about how he looks very scattered during some of these moments. That's not exactly a good sign. But let's say that Glenn's out soon. The next guy comes in. The first time things go awry, guess what? It all leads us back to this mental instability because we've all been jarred and scarred for so long. So there's the small picture, like the Jets should have won that game. As good as Denver is, I mean, they made a litany of mistakes. The turnover on the opening drive, they gave up a 70-plus yard kickoff return. They got burned on a fake punt conversion. They had holding in the end zone, and the Jets score 11 points. Like, you can't make it up. Fields holds the ball way too long. They have no trust in him. It's apparent based on their lack of willingness to even go for it at the end of the half with that ridiculous, pathetic display of waving the white flag. So they don't have a ton of talent in too many important spots. They have got one wide receiver. Their secondary stinks. Nobody thought they'd be amazing this year, but you have to hope it's stabilized soon, Sal, because if it's not stabilized soon, even somebody who could wind up being very good like Aaron Glenn is going to get swallowed up by the Jets' hate and the Jets' fans' discontent because we've had it.
Right, but I think that we're watching a first-time head coach learn. It's part of the risk when you're hiring a guy who's never done it before at this level. And Aaron Glenn has worked his way up, of course, and has had some success as an assistant, coordinator, whatever you want to say. But this is bound to happen with first-time head coach. Todd Bowles is better in Tampa. Not because it's not New York or because it's not the Jets, although that may be a part of it, but also because he learned from his 4 years with the Jets. Like, that's a part of it. This should not be a breeding ground for others to go elsewhere and have success, whether it's Sam Darnold, whoever it may be. You pick the head coach, you just reference Todd Bowles. Like, you should be not learning at the NFL level, especially in New York. But that's what they're in with Aaron Glenn. And I do like all the intangibles as far as his attitude, what he has to say, even being terse with the media. I don't care what he says or questioning dumb questions in his mind. I care about how he manages a game. And that was not anywhere near where it needs to be yesterday. But I do believe that he learned from it. And you hope that he doesn't make these stupid mistakes moving forward. The problem is they're 0-6. And the problem is the noise is getting louder and louder. And who knows how long Aaron Glenn is going to survive here or if Woody reacts. And then we could be in the same spot again next year with somebody new.
But that's the only reason why I do have an issue with whether it's combativeness or terseness. Not because I'm from the generation of everybody gets a trophy. It's the exact opposite. If you don't win, you don't get nothing. I mean, come on. We're both from the same school when it comes to that. But I just think it adds extra things on his plate that, you know, that can get in the way of him being judged fairly. That was a totally good question by Costello. And Aaron treated him like, you know, you would treat, you know, nothing. You should never treat a 10th grade journalism student this way either. But like, almost like he had zero credentials. Like, how dare you ask me that? Dude, it's a fair question, Aaron. So you live and you learn. We've all made mistakes, whether it's early on the mic for you and I, or early in a marriage, or early in a friendship, or whatever it might be. Like, you've got to give people the room to grow, but it's got to start soon. And if he continues to jab and, you know, go back and forth with the media, it's not going to end well. You're not going to give him a fair shake.
And as for the Tyrod Taylor thing, like, we could disagree on that. And I know you and I are, I think, pretty much in agreement. Like, it never registered to me, oh, let's go to Tyrod Taylor. And maybe that's because winning the game is, like, winning the game with a backup quarterback to me was not paramount yesterday. I understand you're trying to win the game, and I understand that Justin Fields was awful, but there are seasons where that may have been the case. If the Jets are fighting for a playoff spot, maybe that would have been the case. This is still in the infancy stages. You're trying to see what this Jets team is made of. They went and made their decision. Justin Fields is their starting quarterback. Also, I don't believe Tyrod Taylor is any good. I think he's a good backup and had some success as a starter in this league. Even then, it was limited success. Like, Tyrod Taylor's not some great thrower of the football. He also makes plays with his legs and is limited throwing the football. Could he have been better than Fields? Hard to imagine anybody could have been worse, but I don't think that the answer was Tyrod Taylor. I don't necessarily think that that would have won them that game, nor do I think it would have been the right move.
Okay, fair enough, and we don't know. And again, I was not sitting there thinking Tyrod Taylor in real time either, so I'm with you there. But I do hope that Aaron Glenn learned something yesterday, where if we're in a similar situation, whether it's this week against Carolina and Justin's holding the ball and he's just not giving his team a chance to move the ball and score some points, even if it's just for a little flicker of hope, he owes it to the locker room to give Tyrod Taylor a chance. Now, do I think the results would be better? I do, because I think Tyrod Taylor is far superior throwing the football. Justin Fields really might be one of the worst throwers of the football in the NFL. Now, there's also a reason why Tyrod Taylor's been pretty much a backup for 15 years. Understood. But he's got the respect of everybody in the locker room. And I would hate to see Aaron Glenn sabotage his own growth to be, you know, committed to somebody who's not even going to be here next year in Justin Fields. You know, if it was somebody that you drafted first or second or third overall that you really believe in, that's one thing. If it's somebody who did stuff for you in the past and had some equity with the franchise, with the fan base, that's something else. And I'm not trying to bury Justin Fields for the rest of the year. I'm just saying that you have to win a couple of games to reinforce the culture change so it could take root a little bit. There's only so many times you can stand in front of a room and say, guys, we're almost there. We're going to get there, I promise, with a goose egg in the win column. That does validate something, even if it's a singular win. So I do think that he learned, like, if the game's in a balance and Fields is playing terribly again, I think that we'll see Taylor at some point.
Yeah, and
I
there may come a point where Glenn feels Tyrod Taylor gives them the best chance to win. I don't believe that's the case right now. But I would not have done that even at the halftime, whatever it may be. Even if it's an awful game, I still would have stuck with my guy Justin Fields. I still would have Fields go out there and start this week. But maybe he gets to a point where he says, you know what, we got to win some games.
Yep.
And Tyrod Taylor gives us the best chance to win, and we see a quarterback change. I just did not think yesterday would have been the time for that. BT and Sal on the Fan, our friends at Town Fair Tire, remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Jim is calling from Newark, New Jersey. What's up, Jim?
Hey, fellas. Thanks for taking a call. I appreciate it. A little background. I'm 56, and my dad got Jets season tickets in 1977.
Wow.
So we've seen a lot of losing over the years. Last year, my dad was giving up the tickets. We had a big family blowout at the last Jet game, and I saw how much my 17-year-old was enjoying it. And I said, Dad, you know what? I'm going to take the tickets over for another year, because I remembered when I was a teenager how much I loved the Jets. But BT, you brought it up before, how you kind of tuned out now. I hit that point years ago. You know where I am now? I'm at the point of hate watching the Jets. That's where I'm at. When they played the Cowboys, I was yelling for the Cowboys to call timeout before halftime because I knew the Jets were going to screw it up. And if you look at Aaron Glenn, he also made a mistake before halftime. I believe it was the Bills game where he overthought it, and he knew Buffalo was getting a ball to start the third quarter, so he tried to do something crazy, and it didn't work out. But Aaron Glenn isn't getting fired in his first year. I'd be shocked if they make that move. On the other hand, Justin Fields is an 11th-round draft pick from 2021 on his third team already.
I know we all know. 11th overall, not 11th round. Keep going. 11th overall, keep going.
Yeah, 11th overall pick in the first round. I'm sorry, in the 11th round.
Yep.
So I believe that's where the problem lies. He is the issue. He's not an NFL-caliber quarterback. Two other teams have already figured that out.
Yeah.
And now the Jets are taking a flyer on him. So that's our biggest problem. And just one more point, guys. They talked about it at the postgame yesterday. The Jets got 11 TDs this season. Seven of them are in the fourth quarter. you know, basically garbage time because they've been trailing every game.
I saw the
stat. Four TDs for real when it mattered. I mean, nobody's winning like that.
Yeah, well, I mean,
appreciate the time, guys, man. It's going to be a long season.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks for the call there, Jim. Again, is right. I mean, listen, 11 touchdown, most in garbage time of the game is out of reach, and you do a little prevent defense, whatever. Okay, true, but they also should have had one against Miami, and that was the opening drive where they just shoved it down their throat and they ran it time after time again.
Mm.
Like, it's not that there's no hope, but see, the problem with Justin Fields, and again, I admit I was a little fooled by this here, right? You see a young... You know, pretty jacked and just like he emits leadership and he emits energy. And I do think that there's guys in that locker room that respond to him. And we did see him play at Ohio State and win a lot of games and put up a lot of points and pair with some guys on Saturdays that are now doing their thing on Sundays, including Garrett Wilson.
And he played great in week one.
He played awesome. That was one of the best games he's ever played, there's no doubt. And then, of course, yesterday was the absolute worst that he's ever played. So, and in between, you've had much more like yesterday than like the Steelers. But he just cannot decipher what's in front of him. And I'll let Boomer tell you that. Maybe Tiki can tell you that, even as a running back. I don't pretend to know fully. You know, like, what is that threshold where if you can't go through progressions, if you hold on the ball, if you're afraid to let it go, if you can't anticipate, what is the point where you can never recover from that? I don't know. But I feel pretty confident saying that Justin Fields will never be good. And I thought that he could be good.
Okay, but remember how the Jets were supposed to be built this year offensively. It was never that Justin Fields was a good thrower of the football. They were supposed to run the football consistently. So while everybody's focusing on Justin Fields and the idea that he's holding on to the ball forever, maybe if anything, it should have gone with Tyrod Taylor. How about you run the football? How about that? How about you don't throw it as many times? Like, to me, that's an issue too. And Breece Hall, not that they threw it a ton, but still, Breece Hall's got to be better at running the football. So the Jets as a whole, now losing Braylon Allen did not help their cause, obviously. Vera Tucker did not help their cause, but they should still, like, the Jets were never going to be successful, period, if they could not run the football. That is how they were built. They were supposed to run the football and play defense. That's like the bare minimum of a foundation for a team that doesn't have much else. We're going to run the football, play it close to the vest, play some solid defense, and hope to win some tight games. That's how they were built. And that can't happen. They couldn't run the football on the Broncos yesterday. And that's not a lot of people can. Broncos are good defensively. So I would chalk up yesterday, while it was frustrating to watch Justin Fields do what he did, while it was frustrating to watch Aaron Glenn make some of the idiotic decisions that he made, or the indecision, whatever, that he made, to me, I chalk it up to Denver just has a superior defense, and that's why the Jets lost the game.
And the superior coach. That goes without saying. And the next thing that we're going to have to really start dialing into, especially if they don't beat Carolina or Cincy without Burrow, is November 2nd. That's the NFL trade deadline. And that could represent, you know, a window for the Jets to get some real... Like, you tell me a team that... I'd have to really look at the standings, but you tell me there's not a team out there that wouldn't love to have Breece Hall? They're not going to extend Breece Hall.
I would trade everybody. Yeah, I'm talking Garrett. Well, no, seriously.
I wouldn't trade Garrett. Yeah. I heard you say that last night.
I would.
I wouldn't trade Garrett. Listen, I think that here's what I think the Jets have, and it's a very short list. I think they've got two very good, very interesting offensive tackles, obviously one on each side. I think Garrett Wilson is a first tier, the lower end of the first tier, but for me, a first tier wide receiver. I think they nailed it with Mason Taylor with a better quarterback. They've got themselves, finally, their young tight end. I mean, I'm not a big Sauce guy at this point, but I don't even really count him. They've got a really good defensive tackle, and they've got, whether it's Jermaine Johnson or Will McDonald, and Quincy Williams when he's healthy, a couple of good, interesting pieces in the front seven. That's it, man. So if somebody calls me up and wants Breece Hall, I'm not signing Breece Hall, who already ripped up his knee, hasn't won anything, isn't as good as some people think. Like, if somebody wants to give me a third round pick for Breece Hall, I'm taking it.
I'm not even sure you get that, but I would be open for business on anybody. Sports Talk on WFAN is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Steve is in Fairfield, Connecticut. What's up, Steve?
Hey, how's it going? Sal, a couple things. One, you're wrong about Justin Fields and Tyrod Taylor yesterday. You said that Tyrod Taylor wouldn't ignite the offense. You didn't need to ignite the offense. They needed 3 points. If they literally spiked the ball every single drop back they went to pass, they would have had a better offensive performance than what they had. They had negative 10 yards passing. If they spiked it every time, they would have 10 more yards. So, like, Justin Fields needed to be benched at some point yesterday.
So let me ask you this. Hold on, Steve. So if you would have gone to Tyrod Taylor, now of course if he pulls a rabbit out of a hat and he throws a touchdown, they win, then you probably have to give him the start. When you're saying just go to him for a minute and see what happens and then go back to Justin Fields, or you're thinking Tyrod Taylor,
In yesterday's game, I would have put Tyrod Taylor in, and then yes, I would have went back to Justin Fields next week against Carolina. Like, Tyrod Taylor's not the long-term answer. Justin Fields most likely isn't, but you still have a higher ceiling potentially. So you got to figure it out that you paid him. If he stinks again, you take him out again. But yesterday was a game you could have won. That was pathetic. I mean, we've watched terrible quarterbacks for the last 15 years. That was the worst thing I've ever seen. The issue is Woody Johnson. He has a horrible character assessment. He cannot pick the right people. Every time he picks the wrong coaches. You also said that Bowles was a good coach. He was beyond terrible when he was the Jets coach, and he stunk early on with Tampa Bay. He took a team with Brady that went 13-4. Then he went 8-9 his first year as a head coach there, and he still had Bruce Arians basically calling all the shots. The next year, he went 9-8 with Baker, and then he went 10-7. Like, those aren't necessarily great years. And
Steve, stop. Yeah. You sound lost when you say that. Have you watched the Bucs and what they've done? You reference it so you know what's going on.
He went 8-9 with Brady. The year before they went 13-4. That's a huge drop off.
Okay, he's not perfect. He's a good coach, one of the best coaches in the league right now with one of the best teams in the league.
Yeah, but he's been there for 8 years and he was defensive coordinator and he still is Bruce Arians. And I'm not saying he's the worst one, but my point is Woody Johnson stinks at hiring talent. For the first time ever, they're going to probably get a top five pick, maybe one overall. They're going to take a quarterback, and it's going to be the same thing where they have a defensive coach. They don't build around the quarterback. Like, take a quarterback and then get a new head coach that could actually design a system for that quarterback.
Who? I'm not saying you're wrong, Steve, but who?
Right. He doesn't like Todd Bowles, who's been in the playoffs almost every year since he's been there. Been a winning coach. I mean,
Todd's become a good coach, man. Got a lot of respect for Todd Bowles. There's no doubt. Listen, to me, now, when he brings up Woody, because he spent most of the call early on Tyrod and Justin Fields, which, okay, that's a little ancillary piece of the puzzle. The big issue is Woody. And I'm going to tell you the problem with Woody Johnson. Woody Johnson, as an owner, is a headline hound. He is desperate. And I don't mean like where he's in the paper every day. I don't mean that. He's fairly, anonymous in terms of the day-to-day operations. But what he desperately craves, and you need to understand this, he desperately craves for the Jets to eventually win and then everybody say, wow, Woody, you got it done. Why do you think he never hires an established head coach? Because if he brought in, not many Parcells, but like a Gruden or, I don't know, or a Pete Carroll, they would actually win, who's getting all the credit? It's going to be the veteran head coach that probably won before somewhere else. If it's Robert Saleh, if it's Gase, although he was the head coach with the Dolphins, if it's obviously Aaron Glenn or anybody else that he's hired that was a first year, everybody, Mangini, who gets the credit? Woody, wow, look at the foresight. Woody Johnson, what an exemplary owner. Wow, what a vision. That's the biggest problem. He's got this underlying desire to be the man. He didn't even know football, let alone being the man. So what he should do, whenever he hires a new coach, how about you hire somebody who's done it before and just get the hell out of the way and stay out of the way?
I think part of the problem is that the guys who have done it and done it well before don't want to deal with whatever he's...
It's a big part of it. Why would I go work for him?
Exactly. Less about that he wants to get credit for, although maybe there's something to that, and more about these guys... They see how it's run. They're like, there's no way I'm going to work here and have success here. Aaron Rodgers tried to clean it up. He saw it was a disaster. He tried to identify all the things and help them get the hell out of the abyss. And then guess what happened? They made Aaron Rodgers out to be the problem. All of them. Whether it's the players in the locker room, the owner, the front office, the media at times, same thing. Rodgers was the one guy who actually had a clue and he wanted to be here. And look what happened. Push him out of town. Couldn't wait to get him out of here. Because he's done, right? Look at what he did with the Steelers yesterday. Look what he's doing this year. Obviously, it's the Jets. It's the Jets. It's not the different head coaches. It's not the failed quarterbacks. It's the Jets.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We at least have one football game to look forward to Sunday, although I do think this could be maybe a week, BT, where we get the Jets on the board here, and maybe the Giants could put together back-to-back wins. The Giants will be taking on the Broncos, and you get a nice one. Jets are at one, and the Giants are at four, right? So you get a nice one.
Yeah.
We haven't had that in a while, one into four.
There you go.
Back-to-back. If it's not enough watching them individually, now you get back-to-back the Jets into the Giants. So that should be a fun Sunday.
Listen, I can't wait to watch Dart, you know, and Scatterboo, obviously. But the Dart story just makes it fun for Giant fans. You know, I wish I had something like that to look forward to. It's a totally different energy and different hope. So that's one aspect. And that's the thing that I said to Sal the other day, too, and we have all week to get into the Broncos and the Giants here. But it's going to help Denver getting home here. But they elected not to take their bye after the London trip. So, you know, I mean, the Giants, having played on Thursday night, get a couple extra days off.
Is that,
you know,
that big of a deal? How long is the flight to London?
Well, from Denver to London, I believe, is 9 hours, because from New York to London's about six.
Is it six?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Five and a half, something like that.
Then that is a pretty
tack
significant,
on, you know, across the country now. So, you know, plus the Giants played Thursday and the Broncos played yesterday. It's like a little mini bye. Giants, you know, should be feeling good about themselves. Yeah, and I'm looking forward to it.
And look, with the NFL, who the hell knows? I mean, 1 week to the next, you look at these teams here around the league, and we do it with the power rankings when we power up every Thursday. You know, it seems to be changing week to week, so anything could happen on any given week. But I still think Denver is just a different level team than the Giants. You can say, well, what about the Eagles? Yeah, I get it, but the Eagles, to me, were right for the picking. It was just the right spot. I wouldn't be surprised if the Broncos put it together on Sunday and look like the team who I thought that they were, because now the popular sentiment's going to be, well, the Giants just beat the Eagles. They're extra rested. To your point, the Broncos didn't take a bye after the London game. Broncos didn't look good at all against the Jets for the majority of the game. And now it's going to be like, well, they're beatable. But I just think this is a tough. Now, again, it's Monday. We'll see how the week unfolds here. But to me, that's a tough spot going into Denver, trying to get a win with a rookie quarterback, no less.
My only concern with Denver, and yeah, I guess it applies a little bit here against the Giants this week, but just like big picture, like when I look at where they stack up in the AFC, and obviously, you know, even though they don't have a perfect record, the Bills are really good, and the Ravens are done without Lamar. We know the good teams here. I think the Chargers are really good, but like not dominant. So
right. There's
a window for some of these teams to pop through, including Denver. I don't know. If Denver has to score a lot of points, could they? I think they're a little pop gunnish on that offense, you know? Cortland Sutton's good. They got good players. Can Bo Nix airmail it out if he's in a shootout against a big time prolific offense?
Well,
I don't know about that.
I think that would be the one thing that's holding them back from truly being elite. Like, could Bo Nix go toe-to-toe with Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson or Joe Burrow? Well, who can? I mean, outside of those guys doing it against themselves, like, could Daniel Jones? I think we're going to find out. I mean, we might find out eventually, but I still think Denver's defense is going to carry them. Plus, I do like their weapons on offense and an offensive-minded head coach, but we'll see. Either way, it's going to be a fun matchup to see if Dart and the Giants can follow up off of what they did successfully on Thursday night. Chris is calling from Monmouth County on this Columbus Day. What's up, Chris?
Hey guys, how you doing?
Good. What's up,
Chris?
Happy Columbus Day. So I want to get on about the Jets, but before we do that, what is the secret ingredient in everyone's tomato sauce?
I put a little sugar myself.
I don't know.
And a little red wine.
I'd have to ask my mom.
you with
anchovies? Anchovies. I don't know. I don't know how many people you have listening. I've just given it away. It's
Anchovies.
No way. Take it back, dude.
Boy, yeah, come on, Chris.
I can't stand anchovies.
You're Italian, Chris?
Let me just explain something. You put them. You get the oil going, but you put them in. You don't fry them. You let them dissolve.
I'm not feeling that at all. I can't stand anchovies. Pizza, nothing.
Have you ever tried an anchovy? I've never even had it.
I mean, like a nibble to know it's not like scungili or galamad, which I love. No, thank you.
Okay. Yeah. You all right. So right off the bat, we're on the wrong foot. But nevertheless, I'm calling about the Jets, and you guys really put it eloquently about Woody wanting to, you know, steal the show and somehow save the day. We've solved for everything else. We've replaced our coaches. We've replaced our quarterbacks. At some point, it's the owner. I mean, Justin Fields, I'm sure he's a nice guy, but when he throws the football, it looks like he's throwing a 30-pound, you know, sack of rice.
Yeah, he can't throw the football.
Can't even throw.
Right.
So everyone knows. Everyone knows. He can't throw it long, so we're just going to play him like that.
Yeah.
It's a joke. Let me ask you guys a question. If we had to, I called like 3 years ago, and I said the NFL should have an eminent domain rule. We should have an eminent domain rule where when an owner displays such a level of incompetence, we should be able to take the team from him and give him to another owner.
Nah, you can't do that. I mean, you gotta commit a crime before you get your team taken away or a scandal.
Yeah, and the one thing I would say is that we can all pick apart Woody and what we think the flaws are, and there certainly are plenty of flaws. I don't think it's a lack of effort. He went all in to get Aaron Rodgers when everybody was begging for that. It didn't work. Is it his fault that Rodgers goes down the first play of the game? Like, that's just bad luck. Now, you could say that he could have paired him with a better head coach. You could say that the Jets shouldn't have been in that spot to begin with, having to go get a 40-year-old quarterback. Sure, all those things are true. But a lot of Jet fans love Joe Douglas. A lot of Jet fans love the Aaron Rodgers thing. A lot of Jet fans love Aaron Glenn. I mean, we can't just pick on Woody where if he's making all these moves that Jet fans were all on board with. So I know that he's been a part of the problem, and I do think the Jets' structure is clearly broken, and there has been something broken for years. But I don't think it's just all, well, Woody's just not a good owner. I don't think that that's the ultimate answer either.
Well, I think that there's different types of owners that, listen, take bad owners, like put them all in one big pile. Now, some are bad because they don't spend, like Sterling back in the day with the Clippers. Some are bad because they are maybe a little bit too volatile. Maybe take George Steinbrenner at his absolute worst, just a complete lunatic at his absolute worst when he was banned from baseball. I mean, the thing about Woody is that he did build the beautiful facility for his team. He does spend money. You know, it's not that. It's just I just don't think he knows. I don't think that they have a good football infrastructure. I think any time inside the building, I think too many times the Jets were leaning on somebody, whether it's Charlie Casserly or Peyton Manning. Like, they have very few people in their own building that can formulate their own intelligent opinion and make a decision independent of what others think. So they're always leaning on other people.
Right. Woody should hire the right people in the highest of places and get out of the way. To me, that would be the biggest critique of him. Back to the anchovies thing. Anchovies are to sauce.
Nasty.
What the Jets are to football. I mean, the Jets are the anchovies of the NFL. Hop, have you ever had anchovies before?
I think I've eaten everything before in my life, so I'm pretty sure I've had them. I'm not interested.
Yeah, you've had it or no?
Just to say that I've tried. No, I can't stand it. Think about all the possibilities you could put on pizza. Extra cheese, I mean, pepperoni, meatballs, sausage. I mean, even pineapples and that stupid stuff that some of these weirdos put on their pizza. You couldn't pay me to eat anchovy pizza. It's absolutely repulsive.
This certainly could have been a day we could have used Dove here. He's off today. But doesn't Dove like anchovies?
I think he likes all type of fish.
Okay, yeah, I'm pretty sure he used to eat the anchovies, but I'm not 100% sure right out of the can. I just have never, even just Googling it right now, pulling up a picture of it.
Yeah, not a fan.
That my wife's family, they make these salads for every holiday. Uh-huh. They have one plain regular salad, which is great. They also do one with the leech. La leech.
I don't even know
that is. Anchovies.
Yeah, that probably has some roasted red peppers in it too, because I've seen families for us too. Yeah. I don't touch it, man.
But you don't do the anchovies on like Christmas Eve.
No. Like as one of the seven fishes.
Oh, whatever. No, yeah. God, like no. I don't know. I don't even know it's an Italian thing. Not once growing up I don't even think I've seen anchovies on a table.
My father-in-law loves them. I just can't get behind it. I think they're absolutely gross.
Yeah. All right. Andrew's calling from Bay Ridge. What's up, Andrew?
Drew.
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey. So quick on the Jets before I get to Alonzo. I think it's almost insulting to call it like high school level. Like, I know high school coaches that know X's and O's and that like would never make some of these like cardinal mistakes. So it was just really tough to watch. As far as Alonzo goes, like, he's a DH. That's it. Like, he's a terrible first baseman. I'm sorry. And I'm a Mets fan, and I was for Pete for a long time. But, he, you know, don't forget, like, he got Senga hurt. Every time he throws the ball, it's like a hold-your-breath moment. Like, someone's going to get hurt. Someone's going to be out of position and get split into. Like, he's dangerous at first, to be honest. So I'm okay with him being a DH, but, like, we need a smooth first baseman, and he is not it.
He's a liability. He's a liability at first. And thank you for the call, Andrew. I mean, we know that. We've been saying this for years. I've been saying it for years. I've been fighting with Evan about this for years. You and I talk about it. Pete Alonso is a DH. Now, Pete may not want to hear that, but that's the reality. And I don't run the team, but if I did, I would be saying, Pete, we want you back. I value what you bring, your personality, your intangibles, your power, your prestigious offense behind Juan Soto. I need you to be the DH at least half the time for now, for this year. So I'd be willing to give whatever the market says, 5-6 years max, around $30 million a year. I'm in the 150 max, like 170 category. That's just me. But it would be under the stipulation that he's got to be the part-time DH. And now you upgrade DH because the Mets haven't had one. And you could upgrade first base because you'd be getting somebody who I would look for the exact opposite of Alonso. Somebody's going to hit for a higher average, play
lefty,
excellent defense. Exactly
smooth.
Right. That's exactly right.
I mean, who's out there, Hoff? I don't know if this is coming up on the Rico, but what defensive first baseman are even out there?
They have the kid in the minors, Clifford, who people are saying could be that potentially.
Yeah, there's also the possibility that you put Vientos at first base.
No. He's not the opposite. First of all, he's not good defensively. Second of all, he's a righty bat. No, he's not. He is a DH, too.
What about Goldschmidt for a year? I'm being serious.
No.
Like, if Pete says, you know what?
I want a lefty.
You want a lefty? All right. I mean, I get it. Listen, he's not going to hit much for you. I mean, he signed $12.5 million last year for the Yankees. If Goldschmidt's like, you know what, I want to play one more year. I got a little condo wherever he lives locally. If he's not in a hotel, the Mets offer me a one-year deal for 10.
Put it this way. I don't think it's that important. Like, it would be at the bottom of my to-do list. Once I bring back Pete in this hypothetical and tell him he's going to be the DH, it's not, okay, well, let's go get a first baseman right away. I got other stuff to figure out. But then eventually, like, I'd even be okay if Clifford, and now I don't know anything about him, but by the time let's say Pete starts the year as the first baseman.
Yeah.
You know, a little DH here or there, but they get somebody else to fill in a little bit. But then Clifford eventually takes over as a part-time first baseman at DH that can be the platoon to Pete and eventually be a guy that you want in the lineup against a tough team that you need some defense in there. I don't know if he's the answer, but it wouldn't be at the top of my to-do list.
So I think people need to stop underrating the importance of first base defense. I mean, we see it with Pete with the Yankees. We'd see it with the Mets. We see it with Ben Rice with the Yankees. Like, it still matters.
Yeah.
You don't have to be Donnie or Keith, but you got to be able to have a little fluidity over there.
Can I give you some names? Just, I don't want to do this right now for the rest of the show, but Pete Alonso, then Cody Bellinger, Josh Naylor, Paul Goldschmidt, Max Muncy, Josh Bell, Wilmer Flores, Ryan O'Hearn, Miguel Andujar, Ty France, Dominic Smith, Carlos Santana. You tell me who you want at first base.
Bellinger.
Okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I'd want, if I'm going to get Bellinger, I'd have him in the outfield. Plus, he's way too much money. Like, that's what I'm saying. It can't just be, well, let's bring Pete back and bring in Bellinger. Like, that's
why I'd have to trade Nimmo. That's why I brought that up about 30 minutes ago.
I mean, it's a lot to ask, and nor do I think Bellinger's going to leave the Yankees, nor should he leave the Yankees. I think he's a perfect Yankee. But anyway, yeah, I mean, in theory, would he be a guy? If Bellinger was going to sign a 1 or 2 year deal, 100% I'd go after him. But I would want him more for center field, although I guess in this scenario, you could have him play center and then have, when Pete DHs, you can move Bellinger to first. The problem is then who's playing center? Like, you need a center fielder as well.
Acuna?
Yeah, I don't know if I do that. I mean, the Mets do have two guys in the minors who were supposed to be ready this year with Clifford and Carson Benj potentially being in center field. And maybe Jet Williams, obviously another one, but he's going to be, you know, let's say second base, something like that. Again, I'm not relying on these rookies, BT. I can't trust them, but they are going to have to be some part of the plan, because it can't just be going out and getting the free agents. You just heard that list of the free agents.
Like, that's not appealing.
Honestly, Dom Smith would be the one that's appealing, because I remember he was a good defensive first baseman. You want Dom Smith back here? Is that going to be the answer? Like a cheap lefty bat that plays good defense at first base? Like, that's
the profile.
Yeah.
That's the, you know, and I think back in the day, there was more guys like that, like the Lyle Overbays, right, or just, I don't know.
Exactly. Go get a lefty first baseman that's not going to hit a lick, but it could play good defense. Maybe it's in part because they don't teach good defense anymore, because most teams don't think it matters. It's all about launch angle and hitting home runs, and it doesn't really matter.
I think the position's kind of morphed back into heavy-footed, you know, stone hands. Not that Pete has stone hands, but You just have to upgrade it. There's no doubt. 888 in terms of defense. Keep Pete with the stick, but you got to get some leather.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
You wanted to mention something here about your Johnnies? What do you got, BT?
Well, I mean, listen, they're kind of your Johnnies at this point,
well,
I would hope. I mean,
Johnnies,
you know, I don't know if I go as far as say our Johnnies, but you got a little piece of the Johnnies.
Although,
you came to a game last year. And, you know, come on.
We're not the ones hanging out with Coach Pitino.
Oh, yeah, no.
Some others are around here.
I went in to say hi to Boomer and Gio today. I haven't really seen them in a while, and I was actually just ranting about the Jets here. The first thing I hear, oh, dude, we played with Pitino before I even got into
How
the
was
Jets
it? I didn't hear them talk about it. What'd they say?
They didn't talk about it? That's stunning.
I don't know if they did. I might not have heard it.
They said it was awesome.
Yeah.
They said Rick was great. I guess Gio played pretty well. I don't know who won the match, but Greg said that, you know, Greg's fairly new to the game. And that is a hellacious course. I mean, the greens
are
crazy.
Is Pitino better than...
He broke 100.
Who did?
Gio.
Okay.
Pretty good there.
Is Pitino better than Boomer?
No. I mean, I think Boomer smashed the ball probably much further. But they said, Boomer said that when Rick hits it, it's pretty straight. Knows his course, obviously, because he lives on wing foot. Anyway.
Kind of like Mike. So I'll probably take, like, me and Mike could take down Pitino and whoever.
You and Mike versus Pitino and Gio?
Yeah.
Well, really what it comes down to is you versus Gio. I don't know. I mean, to Francesa, when he's not hitting me and almost killing me, his ball is straight.
Oh, stop it.
And I think that Rick is straight. So can you beat Gio? I mean, broke 100.
I have to play more than twice in the last two years.
Yeah, you're right.
All right, go ahead.
So St. John's, right, they just came out with the AP Top 25, right?
Mm.
And I knew that they'd be really, really high. Where do you think they're ranked going into the year?
I'm going to guess number 4.
Number 5.
Okay.
Number 5.
Who's in front of them?
I don't have that in front of me. I would imagine UConn, maybe. Because
I thought you said they could be. I'm just going based off of like.
I thought they could be 2.
Yeah, okay.
I'm a little surprised. Yeah. I thought they might be a little bit higher, but they've got so many new players that maybe you want to give them time to gel. UConn's probably a slot higher. They're absolutely stacked up there in stores. But the crazy thing about this.
You have the schedule, by the way?
I got it. Yeah,
UConn, St. John's. When's the first meeting with those two?
There's one, I believe. I thought they really messed up with this because one of the games is a Wednesday night. Like, one is Saturday.
At the Garden?
The Wednesday night game, I believe, is up in stores. Hang on. Let me pause. So St. John's playing Kentucky this year. They're playing Alabama this year. They got some really good non-conference
slate. What's like their best home games?
The best home games, let me just pull the whole thing up here for you. Yeah. All right, so they've got, the season opens November 3rd. It's a couple of weeks away. They've got Alabama, who's the top 15 team. That's Saturday, November 8th at the Garden. Then they've got, Baylor, who's good, but that's in Vegas. Yeah, I hear you. They're good, though. Like, then Kentucky down in Georgia.
Okay, that's
there. That's on CBS. Okay, that's a national game. At the Garden, I mean, it's obviously going to be UConn. Nobody else. They're not playing Duke this year. And, you know, Villanova is going to be fun, although Villanova is not nearly as good as UConn. So the Huskies game is Friday, February 6th. That's 8 p.m. That's at the Garden. That's amazing. Okay. But the other one, and I want to make sure that it's up there, if I have that right. Yeah, it's got to be a little later in the season. Yeah, the second UConn-St. John's game is on a Wednesday night.
And that's there?
In February. Like
up there?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Talk about missing a chance to really... I mean, somebody, listen.
So the only game that...
There's not that many high-profile teams in the Big East. I mean, it's UConn at St. John's, like the Paul Stinks.
So
like,
the marquee game on the schedule, that's it, is hosting UConn? I know there are going to be some other, you know, in-conference games, but that's it?
No. Again, I mean, I think you're underselling Kentucky. You're playing Kentucky.
I thought you said St. Georgia.
Yeah, it is.
I'm talking about just here. The Garden. Yeah.
You
don't want to go to.
Oh, you want? I got you. Well,
for like the French
Alabama's good.
Okay.
And now, it doesn't have the juice, the out-of-conference, but Alabama's a legitimate program. The crazy thing about this ranking, and St. John's is just beyond loaded. You got Rick pressing the button, so they're going to be amazing this year. Who knows if they get to the Final Four. They've got a real chance to do it. The crazy thing is they're ranked number 5 to start the season. I thought for sure, and I had to double-check this, I thought for sure that the 84-85 team with Mullen, the Final Four team, would have been rated higher than... No, they started that year at number 7. No, even going back to like Lapchick.
So this is the highest ranked St. John's team?
In the program's history, the highest.
That gets me excited. All right, BT and Sal on the fan. We'll come back, get back to your calls here on the Jets, 888-808-1019. Also, the Alonzo stuff, plenty to do as far as the offseason goes as we further, the show into the offseason. But today, mostly a Jets day, and obviously the Alonzo stuff off of the news that he is expecting a 7-year contract this offseason.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.